This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's On Location comes to you from Green Bay, Wisconsin, Salem, Oregon, and Anchorage, Alaska. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Manlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. On today's program, I host Lisa Skinnendorf, the Vice President for Business Development at Systems and Methods Incorporated, and Kate Cooper Richardson, the Director of the Oregon Child Support Program and current President of the National Council of Child Support Directors, NCCSD. You recently heard legislative updates from the Hill. Now take a deeper look into the Internal Revenue Service and their February 2023 memo on unauthorized disclosure and no longer holding findings in abeyance. Lisa and Kate talk about the direct impact on child support vendors and how it relates to the National Tribal Child Support Enforcement Act as it currently sits in Congress. Hear them as they discuss what is being done to address and assist, including with NCCSD, and the potential effects on the families we serve within the child support program. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back. On Location comes to you today with very important and critical news that has a direct impact on the child support program. Before getting too far ahead, let's start with introductions. I'm Tim Leitner with CGI in Anchorage, Alaska, and joining me today are Lisa Skinnendorf, Vice President of Business Development at Systems and Methods Incorporated, better known as SMI, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Kate Cooper Richardson, who's the Director of the Oregon Child Support Program in Salem, Oregon. You know, Lisa, you've been with us On Location a number of times, and we're glad to have you back. And Kate, we're so glad to have you make your first appearance, and for sure, not your last. Thank you both for being here. So let me ask each of you to tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, where you're from. Just share a little bit about yourselves.
Sure. Thank you, Tim. My background in child support started when I was still with my tribal nation, and we received our startup two-year planning grant back in 2005. I was fortunate at that time to connect to the two different tribal associations. There's a Directors Association as well as the Training Association. And out of those, staff from OCSC and IRS Office of Safeguards had attended and encouraged the tribes to take the message forward and seek parity, direct access for the tribes to the federal tax offset program, because they knew back then that the tribes had access to FTI at some level through their counterpart systems and things that they were sharing with the states. And at the time, the IRS had said, you know, we're aware this is happening, but findings will be held in abeyance until such time that legislative action is taken. Kate?
Yeah, hi. I am Kate Cooper Richardson, as Tim said, and I am the director of the Oregon Child Support Program. But I am also this year the president of the National Council of Child Support Directors, NCCSD. And so this issue landed in my lap as president this year. I've been with the program here in Oregon for about 13 years. I'm a lawyer by training and have been in other leadership positions across Oregon state government. And of course, I love child support best of all. But I will say that this issue is testing my patience very much with the IRS in it. I think that probably the IRS can test anybody's patience, but still. So I've come to this issue over the last few years, actually, because in this director position, my senator here, Senator Ron Wyden in Oregon, happens to be the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, which is the Child Support Committee of Jurisdiction in the Senate. So I have been a little closer to some of these issues over the last several years. But now here we are.
Absolutely, here we are. So most importantly, tell us a little bit more about why you're here today. I hear that there's a memo that most recently came out from the Internal Revenue Service that has a direct impact on child support vendors, programs, how it relates to the National Tribal Child Support Enforcement Bill as it sits in Congress. If you would, just take the mic and tell us more.
Sure, I'll start out, Kate, and then feel free to chime in. And I probably should have added a little more that since that time, roughly around 2010, NTCSA has taken this charge forward and really trying to gain parity for the tribes directly on the offset program. And so through all these years since then, we've had numerous visits with staff on the Hill and different offices, of course, the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement. Some of us have hounded our state counterparts relentlessly at different meetings, asking for various letters of support for the tribal issue, as well as the associations across the country to back this. And frankly, it's just been nothing but absolute 100% support for the tribes to have access to the offset program. So we thought we were in great, you know, in great shape around all of this. And then roughly around 2015 to 17, and their conversations started happening more so with Senate Finance and different teams there. And gradually, now Chairman Wyden was actually ranking member at the time. So I had given my dear friend Kate a call one day and said, listen, you know, would you be willing on behalf of Oregon to reach out to your senator as he's ranking member? And could this be something that we do collaboratively and jointly to try to get this bill passed, this legislative fix for the tribes to have access? Of course, Kate said yes, said absolutely. And yeah, I don't know that you're a sucker. I think we all ended up being a sucker, not about the tribal piece, but really around the contractor piece. So one of the things that came to light in all these conversations was the fact that even if the tribes got access, they would struggle with the same issue that the states currently have around contractor access and what that means. And there's differing definitions to that term. But at the time, we thought, okay, we'll fix the contractor piece and include it in this bill, because to us at the time, it seemed a pretty simple fix. We could take care of both of these issues for both the tribal program and the state program. Conversations ensued. We collaborated with NCCSD, NCIA, Kate attached to her program in Oregon, the staff on the Hill attached to Senate Finance. And voila, we had the Tribal Child Support Enforcement Act, which was introduced. The initial version, I believe, was in 2020, and then it went on unanimous consent in the last session. And we have yet to see it move.
Well, not yet, not this session yet. But that is the famous bill, S-534. It's the number you'll hear out there for the Tribal Child Support Enforcement Act, S-534. And I'd like to echo what Lisa said. Really, it did seem like not that heavy of a lift. I mean, there's been that long-term universal support, really, for tribal access. And NCCSD has been there, individual state programs, and everyone. Everyone's been on board. So this issue with contractors' access just creeped in. But it did seem like an easy or, you know, a relatively simple win because, of course, it applies to all of us. And there, it went forward very simply as well. By unanimous consent, the Senate had it, and then boom, there it was. There's a solution. Hooray! And then nothing happened in the House. Congress adjourned, and here we are still thinking, well, it'll come around again. But then here comes February. And in February, I think the official date is February 16th or so, the Office of Safeguards with the IRS sent out its memo, its alert memo. We kind of heard some rumblings this was coming, but there came a security and privacy alert on February 16th, just saying that, quote, effective October 1st, 2023, the Office of Safeguards will no longer hold in abeyance the finding of unauthorized disclosure of FTI to the agency's contractors. That finding that's been there for many states for years and years and years, and it's been held in abeyance for years, awaiting a solution. And there was that solution, our tribal child support enforcement bill. But the IRS, when they said it in the memo, we've been under pressure. We're not going to hold this in abeyance anymore. And boom, a bomb was dropped on all of us. The IRS memo did point to a solution, that long-term solution. Hello, there is a bill out there, S-534. But as you know, any solution that takes an act of Congress, well, it takes an act of Congress. So then with the date of October 1st for all those findings that are not currently critical findings for all the states that have them, and that is most of them, nearly all, maybe all but about six of the states and territories have some version of this kind of finding as a significant finding held in abeyance. But the IRS indicated that they would also make that finding a critical one. Well, a significant finding and a critical finding are very different, even though the findings were issued as significant findings, it's a critical finding. So the message that this memo gave to states or state programs was, you're going to be getting a warning letter about a critical finding in October. And I don't know about any other state, but in my state, an IRS critical finding, that's a big deal. So that's where states are finding themselves right now, with a solution, but a solution that takes a lot of work. And maybe it's not finding as favorable a reception in Congress as it might have in the past, although I think the Senate is probably still there, but we have a different House than we did before. So we've got a solution, but in the meantime, we've got a deadline, and that's where we're sitting right now.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about findings held in abeyance and about contractors. What is the definition, or how does the IRS define what is a contractor? How many contractors are there? What are we talking about? And have any of these breaches that have been identified, have any of them been, you know, nefarious? Has it been, you know, willful? You know, whatever you want to put with that.
This is where I wanted to answer a little tongue-in-cheek, and you can edit this, Tim. But curiously, it really does depend on who you ask at the IRS or who the auditor is that comes to your program. And it doesn't matter if it's a tribe being audited or a state being audited. They all have differing interpretations of the term contractor. So we would all like to know how they define that and be consistent, you know, have that consistent definition of the term contractor, so we're all operating from the same standpoint.
Because in the end, as Lisa said, there really isn't a definition of contractor. So it is, you know, whatever it means to that auditor. And now I could say, well, then that gives us lots of room to argue because we can make our argument for the definition. But the IRS Office of Safeguards, they're going to take their auditor's finding first, then states can come back and challenge that. I don't think anyone really has done that today because it's a finding held in advance. Why do it? I will say that in my own state, I'm a state that has this finding as well. It was kind of a general contractor statement. I don't have a lot of, you know, outsourced parts of my program, actually. So I haven't had a lot of contractors, although Oregon just went through a full system modernization the last several years, and I had a lot more on board then. But for some of the findings, if you look at them and you start to try to figure out what the definition is of a contractor, if you look at all the state findings together, you can't tell. Sometimes it's another state agency, which just blows my lawyer mind because the state is the state is the state, right? You can have agreements within a state, but we are one entity. You can't contract with yourself. So, yeah, I mean, how could that be a contractor? For others, it's their subrecipients. Of course, we're state programs, but some are administered by counties. And counties, they're also governmental entities, and they're a subrecipient of the child support grant. We don't see them as contractors in the way that most people would define contractors, but sometimes that would show up in a state's finding. It's really all over the map. Actually, that's the threshold problem we've got, is that we don't have a definition of what a contractor is. It depends. And to your question about how many are there, well, it depends how you define it, right? And then you think about state programs that have privatized offices or are a fully privatized program. So they're the 40 agency, but are they a contracted 40 agency? This is not an answer we've had from the Office of Safeguards. A lot of the solutions or mitigation plans or whatever actions we're going to take to fix this, well, okay, you might think you're fixing it, but what if your auditor says something different or you have a disagreement about what a definition of a contractor is? So we've posed, and I say we, I mean OCSC and NCCSD. We are a collection of all 54 state directors, all 54 state and territory directors. We met with OCSC. We pulled questions together. We tried to have conversations with the IRS Office of Safeguards and posed some of those questions. That meeting didn't happen, so we have submitted them. We don't have the answers yet. And in my opinion, I don't think the IRS really knows the answers to those questions. So we feel a little stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it's clear as mud.
That's a good metaphor.
So, Lisa, I can imagine you have already been making visits to the Hill, you know, the House Ways and Means and the Senate Finance Committee. Can you tell us about these and who your discussion has been with? How receptive have they been? Just speak to that, if you would.
Sure. Obviously, the Tribal Child Support Enforcement Act was passed on unanimous consent in the Senate last session. That being said, we've had a great relationship with the staff on Senate Finance, the members themselves and their respective staff, and have been very thankful for their support through the years and willingness to assist with a resolution. And again, as I said before, this is in part due to Kate, as she was instrumental in connecting us all to now Chairman Wyden's team when the issue was first worked on a handful of years ago. So we continue to have conversations with them and seek guidance on other offices and such that we should be connecting with. We also continue to have conversations with those respective members on House Ways and Means, as again, they have jurisdiction over this issue. We're fortunate in my state to have representation from Representative Moore, who is Wisconsin. So she sits on Ways and Means, and her tax staff have been very, very helpful this session as well. So we're hoping to make some inroads there and are really concentrating on having more conversations with Joint Committee on Tax and the oversight folks connected to it.
That will be a huge difference. And really, really so many tips of the hat to NTCSA and Lisa and her colleagues for the work that's been done on this. So much ground has been plowed over the many years, but now we've got this extra twist. And although we, NCCSD and SIA, have kind of walked alongside to some degree, we've started to kick it up to a different level and jointly work this. This is not just the tribe's water to carry. We're all in this together. And we are happy to take our lead from them and the relationships that Lisa and her colleagues have built and then build upon those as well and show that NCIA, NCCSD, NTCSA, the tribes together on this issue. I think it carries more weight to see us all together expressing concern about the consequences, but also making clear the assurances that we know what we're doing, that this is not something new, actually. And what's kind of a point I want to make is that we've had these findings for many, many years, as you noted. And that means we've had the proverbial contractor access to FDI for decades now. And going to your question earlier, Tim, that we didn't answer is, you know, what kind of breaches have been out there? Yeah, well, I'll just say that there's been nothing big, newsworthy whatsoever. There are those you know, day-to-day accidental disclosures of, you know, one-offs, I guess I would call them. Accidental disclosures of FTI. Somebody mailed something they shouldn't have mailed or whatever. That's not even necessarily contractors versus a public official. Those things happen and to public officials. And frankly, I think just probably from sheer numbers, it happens more often with public officials. But we don't have any big stories at all with disclosure of FTI. So my argument has been, look at this pilot program, folks, that we have had for decades. We have all the safeguards that are put into place. And this is part of the education, is that we've got this long history. Oh, and I mean, we've been working with this data for almost 40 years now, including FTI. We have a strong history showing what we do. We participate in the IRS safeguards reviews. We do the safeguard review reports annually. We have corrective action plans if there's ever any problems with anything. We notify the IRS 45 days in advance before we onboard any contractor with access to FTI. And they have to go through the same level of protections, trainings, all those things as we do. So there's really no difference. And we have a long history of it working well. We're just talking about some data elements here. Really, we're down to just a few data elements. Contractors already have a few of them authorized in law. And the change in the code that will give them access to just a few more, well, they've already had access to those few more. And we've been doing it well. So the change in legislation would resolve the disconnect between OCSC's laws and regulations and the IRS's laws and regulations. And that's kind of where this problem is. It's that there's a disconnect in those two laws, and they can't be resolved except by getting them resolved in another law. And that's all this is. It's not something new. It's just getting a long-standing problem resolved.
Thank you for that, Kate, because I think that's been one of those where, as of more recent, that there's this idea that we're opening this up or looking to open this up, and it's all these new folks, and it isn't. It's exactly that, just a few additional data elements that they already have access to, other data elements, and it's just adding a few more. And I think that's really important, because I don't know that people are always hearing that.
Practically speaking, let's just look back at those findings and say, okay, so all 40 programs need to remove access to contractors. But if we have to remove access to contractors, many, many, even most of those programs, they just can't do that. They can't function. They certainly can't, and they certainly can't do it in a 30-day time period. It would take years and years and millions and millions and millions of dollars to move that direction. So what's the alternative? What's the practical result? It just means that most states or tribes would end up saying, I'm sorry, we can't participate. We don't want FTI, and because we can't function without our contractor support. We don't have enough support otherwise, so no FTI. But no FTI means no offset program, which also means we would be outside our compliance with the state plan. So again, go back to that conflict you have between OCSC's laws and regulations and the Office of Safeguards regulations and laws. It's not just trying to fix that problem so we can keep the offset program. We may not even be able to fix that FTI contractor issue. And that's where some states would just have to throw up their hands and say, now what? And then OCSC is in a bad position as well, because they have a responsibility and to have states comply with their state plans. So, dilemma.
You said that so well, Kate, and it applies the same on the tribal program. I have agencies right now that tell me, tribal agencies that have shared that the offset program has been upwards of 20% of their collections, and it's the only collection that a family will receive all year long. And for that to be all of a sudden done is extremely detrimental.
So, you know, with all this discussion, I've got to ask, what's the best case scenario and what's the worst?
Best case is obviously that Congress provides the legislative fix that's needed before October 1. That would solve everything.
That would solve everything. I said that's the best case scenario, but frankly, well, I would say it's the second best scenario because I want them to do it by July 1st. That would be best. Because our gray hairs will be coming in faster and faster and faster the closer we get to October 1st. That is the answer. And I'll say, because I'm an optimist, I don't think I'm being Pollyanna here. I think I'm just an optimist. But I believe people will do the right thing eventually, and the sky will not fall on us. Hard things can happen, and I believe we'll achieve that eventually. We've got this wonderful history to show that we can do this. The Senate has already shown that, and we'll concentrate our efforts on bringing the House along. Frankly, they haven't had this issue in front of them as long, and they're less familiar, and they're skeptical. And you put the word IRS out there, and they're super skeptical. Everybody is. We all are. So we will keep on that. And I would think we'll see it eventually. The best scenario, though, is to get that as soon as possible so that the stress, the effort, and really the resources going into the states and then also at the national level can be better directed to doing the things we do best, which is getting those funds, that support to our families. It's a huge distraction that could be easily resolved. So that's the best scenario. Worst? All right, Lisa, what do you say?
Oh, I think that ultimately the worst case scenario really goes back to the families again, that they go without collections because we won't be in compliance. None of us will be in compliance and we won't have access to the program. And ultimately, it affects them the most.
That is right on. The worst case scenario is that families in every state, every territory, every tribe not receive that child support. And so many of our participants, our families, receive funds from that offset program. And so not having those would make a real, true, deep difference in people's lives. So that is the worst case scenario. I also think it's a huge hit to the program and the program's reputation because, yes, we can point our fingers at the IRS all day long, and we will. We will do that. But in the end, where do the families look? They look to us. They're relying on child support programs, and we're here to get those funds to them. I would see it as an absolute failure if we cannot achieve for our family this solution now. And I think it could set our reputation and the many gains we've made over the last many years on becoming a different sort of program. I think it can set that back. It could really harm us.
Yeah, for sure. So, Kate, what has NCCSD been doing to address and assist as states and tribes are going to have to do the heavy lifting?
We're mostly crying. Oh, no. Maybe that's just me. So as you know, we, NCCSD, we are a collection of directors. We don't have staff. We are just those directors, right? And so we're doing what we do best. We are supporting each other. We are talking with each other. We are sharing information with each other. So as president, I have created a committee that's targeted to this issue, the Access to FTI Committee, so that we can concentrate on bringing information together and talking about next steps for us as an organization. And also as collectively and individually, so sharing data, working with OCSC. So a couple things that we've done. We've done a survey just gathering some data to gather all those findings and working on pulling together those findings and looking for the trends, looking to create some data so that we can share that with as we're advocating for a solution, and also showing how broad the impact is, but also how messy it is. Those findings, you know, going back to the definition of contractor, it's messy. So we're working on doing that in a way that de-identifies individual states or individual contractors, of course. But that information is helpful because it also shows us working all together. We are sharing questions that we've been posing collectively to the Office of Safeguards through OCSE. We're working very closely with OCSE, but we're also posing individual questions here and there from states to the Office of Safeguards. Fielding that information, we get that back and forth. We're sharing our mitigation plans now, what's happening, the mitigation plans, what's happening within our states on the mitigation side with that October 1st deadline looming. We also, of course, then have that focus on the long-term solution. So toward that end, we are working with NTCSA and we are working with NCIA toward a joint resolution that we can share. I think that agreement's going to be maybe the easiest things we've ever passed as an organization. I think it's mostly information gathering, and there are some individual states that are also evaluating other options as those dates are coming close. And we all will. My program is I work for the Attorney General, and there are almost always some legal options that may be available or should be evaluated. So sharing information, sharing approaches, and then working together toward that long-term solution. Going back to what Lisa said about where we should target our efforts as well, trying to use those connections within our states with congressional delegations to reach strategically particular members of Congress or their staff. And then we cry again. No.
No, we're going to have a party when we get this done, Kate.
We're having a party.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So for our listeners, where can they get more information about this? I'm sure that states, counties, and tribes are aware, but just in case, where can they go to learn more? Who can they contact? What can they do?
Well, first, I would say that all of the collective associations are collaborating together on this issue, and we're all trying very hard to share information as it's occurring. You know, we've had, Kate and I have been guests at NCIA board meetings just most recently. We're hoping to put some presentations and have this topic touched on at NTCSA this summer, perhaps NCCSD, and then again at NCIA Leadership Symposium. So we definitely are very mindful and want to make sure that we're keeping the community informed of all of the work that's transpiring and what we're hearing.
That's a tricky question to answer there. There is no website to direct anyone to, and the information is also so fluid that it would be hard to know exactly what one would say. I would recommend, particularly for listeners of state or tribal programs, to reach out to their directors if they're not hearing about it or they want to know exactly what their particular state or tribe program is, how they're responding to this, how they may be affected by it. Then we'll be tracking that effort together. We, NCCSD, has its annual meeting and conference in June in Oregon, and this will be we'll talk about it there, probably not in open session, but definitely at our business meeting. And we have what's called a closed door meeting with the commissioner and OCSE, and that will be a topic there as well. OCSC and NCCSD leadership meets monthly or more frequently as needed on this topic. And so there's a lot of information flowing back and forth, but mostly at the leadership level right now, because there's just not that much to do down on the ground yet. So I'm really just referring folks to their programs and their directors and maybe this podcast.
Or in the future to be continued.
Yes. You know, maybe once this all gets ironed out and looking at a very positive perspective or a positive outcome here, it would be great to have you back on to talk about how this resolved.
I think that will be after our party, right?
Yes, so after our party.
I was thinking about that party. I was thinking that we would have a lot of confetti at the party that comes from those IRS shredders where the confetti has to be very, very small. So that would be our celebration. So, yeah, we'd be happy to come back on and tell you how it all worked out. They lived happily ever after.
Absolutely. So as we kind of go to wrap things up today, or maybe, if you will, put a pause on things, what would be the most important, maybe a couple of things that you would want to stress today? What are the highlights that you want to say, keep these in mind, don't forget these?
Well, for me, I would say, don't panic. Don't panic. It is overwhelming. There don't seem to be clear answers, and the solution seems out of reach, almost unattainable. But it's not really that. People are working on this problem. They will continue to keep working on the problem and the solution, and they will ask for help when they need help. So for me, that's an important one, and to keep our eyes on what we're here for our mission, for making sure we're pressing on, even though it's really hard, because we're doing this. Because it makes a difference every day for our families, for the kids that are receiving the support, and the parents that are supporting their children.
You said that perfectly, Kate. I can't agree more. And really urge people not to panic, that the work will continue. And we're working jointly and collaboratively very hard on this issue.
And I will add that OCSC has this on its very front burner. I'm sure that the commissioner may have her moments on this, just like we do, but they are keeping it on the front burner. It has been up through HHS, ACF, and HHS leadership, as it has on the IRS and Treasury side, although I'm a little more cynical about that part of it. But I do believe that everyone is trying to remember that there are real people at the end of this story. It's a messy business, but we can get through messy business, and we will.
Yes, we will. So this is such a relevant topic and time crucial. Thank you to both Lisa Skinnendorf and Kate Cooper Richardson for taking time today to join us and share this information. We appreciate what you are doing to take leadership on this and to engage others in the effort. For our listeners, please not only find out more, please also share this with your colleagues and your leadership in your local child support offices, whether that be state, county, or tribes. On behalf of the NCA Communications Committee, I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.
On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.